approval.
I call this meeting of the Taxes Committee to order. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Elkins, do I have a motion to move the minutes of the April 29th, 2025 meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair, these look fine. I'll move their approval.
Great. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the minutes are approved. All right. Next up, we have our high school pages joining us this morning, and it's a taxes committee tradition to have you introduce yourselves by saying your name, the representative who represents you, and your high school mascot. So we'll start down there and move to your left, my right.
Sam Mulder, I go to CCS in Wilmer, my mascot is also the Eagles, and my representative is Dave Baker.
I'm Aaron Herman, I go to Faribault High School, I live in Faribault, my mascot is a Falcon, and my representative is Christy Herschel.
Good morning, my name is Abe Vera, I live in Owatonna, Minnesota, I go to Owatonna High School, my representative is Representative Sexton, and my school mascot is Huskies.
All right, thank you everybody, welcome. We're glad to have you with us here this morning. This morning we are focused on the 2025 House Tax Bill. We've got Chair Davids, we've got Chair Gomez co-presenting the bill. Chairs, do you have any opening remarks before we start moving the amendments, or do you want to just move straight to that?
Yeah, go to the amendments, Mr.
Chair. All right. So we'll begin by having Chair Davids move House File 2437 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Next, we will add the DE amendment. Chair Davids, would you like to move the amendment coded A25-0075?
So move, Chair Norris.
Any discussion on the DE amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next, we will move the author's amendment, coded A1. Chair Davids, would you like to move the amendment coded A1?
Chair Norris, I'll move the amendment A1, and maybe we could have some nonpartisan staff discuss it with us here.
That'd be great. Can we have one of our nonpartisan staff walk through the amendment? Looks like we've got Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris and members, the author's amendment mostly makes technical changes to the underlying bill. Section 1.3 to 1.4 of the author's amendment are a substantive change. It's adding a data classification for the electronic political contribution filing system so that in addition to classifying data as private data on individuals, it would classify some data as public or non-public data. Lines 1.5 to 2.11 of the author's amendment is mostly technical. It just moves uncodified language into a codified section. Sections 2.12 to 2.19 adds small city assistance payments to the aid penalty forgiveness provisions in the bill. Line 2.20 of the author's amendment adds Duluth as a city that could potentially use TIF districts for converting underutilized commercial or industrial buildings. Sections 2.21 to 2.25 extends for a year the deadline for establishing special TIF districts in the cities of Brooklyn Park, Eden Prairie, Plymouth, and St. Cloud. Lines 2.26 to 2.27 of the amendment add a conforming six-year rule extension to the St. Cloud TIF district that is already receiving a five-year rule extension in the bill. And lines 2.28 to 2.29 of the author's amendment are conforming technical changes.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the amendment is adopted. All right, so next we will have House Research give a brief overview of the provisions in the bill, and then House Fiscal will walk us through the spreadsheet. So starting with Articles 1 and 2 of the bill, we have Mr. Klayman and Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams to start.
Chair Norris and members, Mr. Klayman and I are going to bounce kind of through the sections as we go. So on page 1 of the summary and also some further sections of the bill, sections 1, 2, and 8 of Article 1, those provisions establish an electronic filing system for the political contribution refund. And Mr. Klayman will handle the next section.
Mr. Klayman.
And Mr. Chair and members, Article 1, Section 3 is the beginning farmer credit provision relating to the Priority Act application deadline.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris and members, Sections 4 and 20 are provisions repealing the ability to assign education credits that was originally in the governor's bill. On page 2 of your summary, in Sections 5, 16, and 19 of the bill, that's provisions establishing a direct free filing of individual income tax returns. Section 6 and 12 of the bill, it's on page 3 of the summary, is the provision establishing an income tax subtraction for coerced debt. Section 7 of the bill, that is also on page 3 of the summary, establishes a new subtraction for employer student loan payments by critical access dental clinics. That one has an amendment from when it was heard in committee to sort of cover situations that would happen if the federal existing employer student loan exclusion expired. Section 9 of the bill, page 3 of the summary, is language establishing a baby bonus within the Minnesota Child Credit. In the amendment, the baby bonus would be $100 for a child or a taxpayer who is a child born during the taxable year, and it's effective in tax year 2028.
Mr. Klayman.
And going off of page 4 of the bill summary, at the top, Article 1, Sections 10 and 11, these are the short line credit transfer and credit certificate provisions. Section 12, I believe Mr. Williams is going to handle that one. Actually, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Williams already went over Section 12. Sections 13, 14, and 15 of Article 1 relate to the Minnesota Housing Credit, and those relate to the workforce housing provisions, and also the Section 14 contains the provision that allows program funds to be used for supportive services.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris and members, on page 5 of the summary, that's language establishing a temporary income tax subtraction for stipends that were included in a collective bargaining agreement agreed to by SIU Minnesota. And then section 20 on the final page of Article 1 in the summary is just the full repealer of the education credit assignment. Chair Norris, that concludes Article 1, and we're happy to pause for questions at this time.
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair and members, my apologies. I neglected to mention on page 5 of the summary, section 17 is the IRA contribution provision that allows for the correction of certain errors.
Thank you, Mr. Klayman. Members, any questions on Article 1 of the bill for nonpartisan staff? All right, moving on to Article 2. Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris and members, Article 2 pertains to sales and use taxes, excise taxes, and local sales taxes. So on page 6 of the summary, section 1, that's a transfer from the Department of Revenue's Service and Special Recovery Fund to the General Fund in fiscal years 2028 and 2029. It's a $3 million transfer. Sections 2, 5, and 6 of the bill or of the article establish a vendor allowance for the sales tax. It's for vendors who collect the sales tax. It's modified from the version that we heard in committee in that the vendor allowance would not apply to legacy sales tax collections. And in addition, the vendor allowance rate would be 0.254 in the current biennium and 0.159% in the tails. And finally, the vendor allowance would be limited to retailers with sales tax liability that was not more than $20,000 and not more than $250,000. Chair Norris and members, section 3 and 4 of the article are the land clearing sales tax exemption that was heard in committee.
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair and members, on page 7 of the bill summary, sections 8 through 12, which goes on to page 8 of the bill summary, these are the premium cigar provisions as amended, as the bill was amended in committee, that essentially converts the refund provision for out-of-state premium cigar sales into an upfront exemption. Moving on to page 9 of the bill summary, sections 13 and 14 are new provisions relating to June accelerated tax payments for the cigarette and tobacco products tax and the alcohol excise tax. And in each one of those provisions, the percentage of June accelerated tax payments due is increased from 84.5% of estimated liability to 90%. And those are effective for payments due in June 2027.
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Mr. Klayman, keep going.
If I can continue, Mr. Chair, that's fine. Section 15 is the brewer return provisions, and those have been modified to allow, from when the bill was heard in committee, and those were modified to allow annual filing without authorization from the Department of Revenue. And I believe Mr. Williams is going to do the last sections of Article 2.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris and members, so on page 9 of the summary, section 16 of the bill is a construction sales tax exemption for the city of Woodbury. And then section 17 on page 9 establishes a legislative task force on local sales taxes. And I would note that we accidentally skipped over one section that's on page 7 of the bill summary. That section pertains to the local sales tax moratorium that was put in place in 2023. So that would extend the local sales tax moratorium 1 year until June 30th, 2026. So the idea being that the task force would meet between now and the expiration of that moratorium. And Chair Norris, that concludes Article 2.
All right. Any questions for our nonpartisan staff on Article 2? Yes, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Norris. Okay, my question has to do with that temporary moratorium. And I just need a little more explanation because it says local sales and use taxes. Does this apply to the transportation part too, or is this just at the city level or the county? Can I just get more explanation on that?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Harder, this would not apply to the county transportation sales taxes. These would this moratorium applies to new local sales taxes enacted by local governments where they'd have to come to the legislature for approval, or any modifications to existing local sales taxes.
Representative Harder.
Thank you for that.
All right. Any other questions on Article 2? All right. Moving on to Articles 3 and 4, Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 3 of the bill is the property taxes article, and this can be found on page 10 of your summary. Section 1 of Article 3 extends the property tax exemption for hangars at airports owned by local units of governments to those used for the manufacture of aircraft. The section also contains a 12-year 50% reduction in net tax capacity for hangars and other airport property located at an airport owned by a city with a population greater than 50,000 but less than 150,000. Section 2 of Article 3 is the provision related to the Alliance Court decision. This would limit the property tax exemption for charitable rental housing so that the exemption is not available to rental housing if it only furthers the charity's purpose by providing housing to those based on income characteristics. Sections 3, 9, and 10 of Article 3 are the attachments and appurtenances provision that clarify how the distribution systems of electric utility co-ops are taxed. Sections Sections 4, 5, and 6 all contain property tax exemptions for properties owned by tribes. So Section 4 and 6 provide property tax exemptions for properties owned by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe in Minneapolis. And Section 5 of Article 3 provides a property tax exemption for 5 parcels of land in Cook County owned by the Grand Portage Band. Section 7 removes the requirement that community land trust property receiving the 4D2 property tax classification be valued based on the normal approach to valuation without any regard to the fact that the properties are community land trusts. Section 8 of Article 3 increases the disabled veterans homestead market value exclusion amounts. So the exclusion available to veterans with a disability rating of at least 70% would be increased from $150,000 to $175,000. And the exclusion available for veterans with a 100% total and permanent disability would be increased from $300,000 up to $350,000. Sections 11, 12, 13, and 14 all increase the maximum household income limit for the senior citizens property tax deferral program from $96,000 up to $110,000. Sections 15, 16, 17, and 18 would allow local units of government to abate property taxes on property that will be used for development of affordable housing and on property that is held by a land bank organization for future development. Section 19 of Article 3 extends the property tax exemption for property owned by the Bloomington Port Authority that is being held for economic development purposes. The current law exemption on this property is set to expire after 2025, and this provision would extend that exemption through 2031. Section 20 provides a property tax exemption for taxes paid in 2021 and 2022 on the Red Lake Nation College property in Minneapolis. This section also provides a state payment for the taxes attributable to the exemption. And finally, Section 21 of Article 3 would require the Commissioner of Revenue to submit a report to the legislature on the advantages and disadvantages of different approaches to reducing property taxes paid by homeowners and renters. Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 3.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Any questions from members on Article 3 for our nonpartisan staff? All right, moving on to Article 4. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 4 is the property tax aids article. Sections 1, 3, 4, and 5 all provide LGA penalty forgiveness for the cities of Alpha, Odin, Stewart, and Trotsky. The author's amendment, as Mr. Williams mentioned earlier, adds the small cities assistance payments to the forgiveness amounts for the cities of Odin and Trotsky. And Section 2 of Article 4 is a base year formula aid adjustment for the city of Baldwin. So this would adjust the 2026 local government aid calculation for the city of Baldwin. You may remember from the committee hearing on this provision that Baldwin was first incorporated in the fall of 2024, will become eligible for LGA in 2026. And this provision will help the city's LGA phase in more quickly than it would otherwise. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 4.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Any questions on Article 4? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to Mr. Cope with Article 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 5 is the Tax Increment Financing, or TIF, article. Sections 1, 2, and 10 of that article would grant special legislative authority to the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth that would allow them to establish redevelopment TIF districts for underused or vacant commercial or industrial properties. Those districts would be exempt from the requirement that they be supported by a finding that the market value of the sites would improve more than what would be expected to increase without TIF. And they would be allowed to write down the original net tax capacity, the value of the land. Section 3 would extend certain temporary TIF authority by 1 year from current expiration of 2025 to 2026, and also includes some technical corrections from the Office of the State Auditor. Sections 4, 7, and 8 of that article modify TIF rules applying outside the metropolitan counties by exempting housing districts from income limitations and by extending the 5 and 6 year rule periods for districts outside those counties to 10 and 11 years. Section 5 would modify income limitations applying to housing TIF districts to allow for income averaging. This is a income limit currently applying to projects receiving the low-income housing tax credit. Sections 6 and 9 would increase the amount of increment that non-housing TIF districts are allowed to use for housing purposes from 10% of total increment to 15%. It would also allow that increment to be transferred to a local housing trust fund and provides rules for how transferred increment could be spent. I'm going to jump around with some of these special TIF authorities. Sections 14, 23, 24, and 28 provide 5- and 6-year-rule extensions for the cities of St. Paul, Minnetonka, Moorhead, and St. Cloud with respect to certain named TIF districts. Sections 20 and 21 provide comparable authority to the city of Edina with respect to two of its TIF districts, but those sections also provide duration extensions. Sections 15, 16, 17, 18, 26, and 27 would provide comparable authority to establish up to 2 special redevelopment districts for the cities of Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, Eden Prairie, Plymouth, and St. Cloud. Those districts would be exempt from blight finding and blight correction requirements. Some distinctions between those districts include some differences in the deadlines for establishing those districts. The Plymouth special legislation also grants a 5- and 6-year-rule extension to 10 and 11 years, and Brooklyn Park would be receiving this special authority for 3 different sites. Sections 22 and 25 grant special legislative authority to the cities of Marshall and Oakdale that would extend the temporary TIF authority that's modified in Section 3 of this article to further extend it to 2027. And, Mr. Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of Article 5.
Thank you, Mr. Cope. Questions on Article 5 from members? All right. Proceeding with Article 6, once again, Mr. Cope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 6 is the public finance article. This is the public finance bill, House File 2730. That concludes the walkthrough of Article 6, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very well, Mr.
Efficiency in government.
Any questions from members? All right, back to Mr. Swanson with Article 7.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 7 is the miscellaneous article. Sections 1 through 7 and Section 9 all make changes related to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. These changes would modify the requirement that bills creating, renewing, or continuing a tax expenditure include a purpose statement and would replace that requirement with a requirement that the chairs of the Tax Committee in the Senate and the House would submit a statement of purpose to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission within 60 days of the enactment of a tax expenditure. These sections would also permit the Commissioner of Revenue to designate another individual to represent the Commissioner at TIRC meetings. They would require the Commissioner to convene the first meeting of the Commission, and they would require the Tax Expenditure Review Commission report to be submitted to the legislature by February 15th instead of December 15th. Section 8 of Article 7 raises the State Agricultural Society's debt limit for state fair bonds from $30 million up to $50 million. Section 9 of Article 7 is, again, just conforming changes related to the TIRC provisions I just covered. Sections 10, 11, and 12 reduce the penalty for failing to provide a renter with the certificate of rent paid from $100 to $50 and then establishes a new $50 penalty for failing to provide DUR with a copy of the certificate of rent paid. These sections also establish a new requirement that the owners and managing agents of rental properties submit that certificate of rent paid to the Commissioner of DUR. Under current law, DOR has the authority to require this, and it has been required in practice. Section 13 of Article 7 creates a 4-year limitation on Sustainable Forest Incentive Act payments to no more than 100% of the property tax that would be paid on the forest land in the prior year, according to the SFIA formula calculation. After any SFI payments have been adjusted to that limit, all SFI payments are then adjusted proportionally so that the overall payment amount equals the fiscal year threshold limit established by that section. Section 14 of Article 7 establishes a permanent rate of 0.5% for the credit for research under the provider tax. Section 15 of Article 7 modifies the timing of when a pharmacy may apply for a refund of the Legend drugs paid to a wholesale drug distributor for drugs that the pharmacy then delivers outside of the state. Under current law, a pharmacy can only apply for the refund when it files its annual return. Under this provision, they would be able to apply for and receive refunds throughout the year. Section 16 removes the 20% dedication of the cannabis gross receipts tax to the local government cannabis aid account, which gets repealed later on in this article. Section 17 of Article 7 allows certain nonprofits to that receive donations for resale to qualify for the lower solid waste tax rates that are applicable to residential properties. Section 18 requires additional earmarks of revenues from the solid waste taxes for SCORE grants in fiscal years 2026 and 2027. Sections 19 through 23 would establish a 10-year pilot program within the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul for land value taxation districts. These provisions would allow those two cities to establish these districts within their city boundaries. Moving on to Section 24 of Article 7, this is just a technical correction related to the repeal of the tax on cannabis and controlled substances, which is in Section 30 of this article. Section 25 of Article 7 extends the availability of a grant to the City of Minneapolis that was appropriated in the 2023 tax bill. That availability would be extended through fiscal year 2027. Section 26 cancels to the general fund any balance in the local government cannabis aid account. Section 27 increases the fiscal year 2029 base for taxpayer assistance grants and tax credit outreach grants by $1.2 million. Section 28 of Article 7 appropriates $520,000 in fiscal year 2026 to the Commissioner of Revenue for a grant to the Browerview Public School District. The district would be able to use the grant for costs related to the construction of a new pre-K through grade 12 school building and a new gymnasium. Section 29 provides $400,000 appropriation to the City of Minneapolis for Emerald Ashborer financial assistance payments. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, Section 30 contains a repealer, and this would repeal the tax imposed on illegal cannabis and controlled substances, and it would repeal the local government cannabis aid program. Mr. Chair, that concludes the overview of Article 7. Before going on to questions, I'll just note that Articles 8, 9, and 10 are all the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill as amended when it was heard in committee.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Members, any questions on Articles 7 through 10 for Mr. Swanson? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to House Fiscal to walk us through the spreadsheet for the bill. We'll start with Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Chair Norris. Good morning, members. Before you, you should have a spreadsheet that is updated with the date May 5th, 2025 at 5:33 p.m. My colleague, Ms. Highmark, and myself will be going through the tax revenue and property tax aid section of the spreadsheet. This spreadsheet is based on two amendments, the A25005 and the A1 amendments, and it shows changed provisions only. In addition, I also should point out that the signs on the spreadsheet for tax revenues and property tax aids and credit are different, and they're noted at the top of the spreadsheet for reference if you would like to refer to the signs. Moving on, I think the first page, to save time and to be efficient with time, I just want to highlight a couple of lines on the summary page. First of all, line 6 shows the total general fund fiscal impact for the tax bill in the fiscal 25 biennium. There's a general fund impact of $106,000. And in fiscal 26 and 27, the fiscal impact actually combined is $40 million, and that's a savings of $40 million. And in the 28 and 29 biennium, there is also a fiscal impact and a savings of $40 million to the general fund. Lines 7 through 20 of the spreadsheet show 11 non-general fund accounts that the tax bill has interactions with or modifies. I won't go through each of those lines to save time. Turning the page, we have the first few pages of the fiscal impact to state tax revenue provisions to the general fund. And on line 3 of page 2, I want to point out that the fiscal 26-27 biennium shows the estimated revenue gain for the tax provisions is $18.886 million in the fiscal 26-27 biennium and $31.377 million in the fiscal 28-29 biennium, and that is a savings to the general fund. I also neglected to mention that the columns for the governor, columns B and C, are also referenced as a reference point as we walk through this spreadsheet. So starting with individual income tax on line 7, I will just be highlighting the provisions that have changed and the fiscal impact relative to how they were heard in the in-tax committee. Line 7 is the individual income tax credit, and this is a new credit that adds to an existing credit an additional $100 for qualifying children born in tax year 2028. And this is different how it was heard in committee. The total credit is $100 per newborn, and it is effective starting in fiscal, 2028. It has a fiscal impact of $2.4 million in fiscal 29. Moving to line 12, this is a provision that's different from how it was heard in committee. This is a subtraction for the student loan educational assistance payments for critical access dental. This applies to all educational assistant payments received for student loans. This has a fiscal impact of $70,000 in fiscal 27 and $70,000 each year afterwards for a total fiscal impact in the tails of $140,000. All other provisions are either the same as how the fiscal impact was heard when the bill was heard, or they are provisions that have a zero cost. Moving on to the sales tax section of the spreadsheet, on line 21, this is a new provision. This is a vendor allowance. This provision has it applies to vendors that have a sales tax liability between $20,000 and $250,000. And as my colleague Mr. Williams also mentioned, it has a rate of 2.54% in fiscal 26 and 27. And 1.59% in 28-29. The fiscal impact of this allowance is a general fund cost of $6.870 million in fiscal 26 and 27 and $4.890 million in 28 and 29. Lines 22 through 25 are provisions that are the same as how they were heard in tax committee. These provisions also have legacy fund impacts and other non-general fund impacts, and I will briefly mention those in another spreadsheet. Then moving on to the cigarette and tobacco products tax section of the spreadsheet on line 28, a new provision is the June acceleration requirement that increases the percent from 84.5% to 90% June 2027 liabilities. This applies to just cigarette and tobacco wholesalers and distributors with tax liability over $250,000. This has a fiscal gain to the general fund of $2.830 million in fiscal 26 and 27. And an $80,000 cost in 28 and 29. All other provisions are the same in this section as how they were heard in committee. So turning the page to page 3, the liquor, wine, and beer tax section of the spreadsheet is line 34 is a new provision. Again, this is the June acceleration, but this applies to the distributors of alcohol. And this has a revenue gain of $730,000 in fiscal 26 and 27 and 20, and 40,000 in fiscal 28 and 29. The cannabis gross receipts tax, starting on line 36, this provision is the same as how it was heard in committee, so there are no changes. Starting on line 40 is the other net revenue section of the spreadsheet. And there is, on line 42, the solid waste management tax, and there is a dedication of the solid waste tax receipts in fiscal 26 and 27 of $354,000 in fiscal 26 and 27, and $1.493 million in fiscal 28 and 29. That concludes the state revenue tax portion of the spreadsheet that affects the general fund. Pages 5 through 6 are the non-general fund provisions, or tax provisions that have non-general fund impact. Lines 3 through lines 29 on page 4 are all legacy fund fiscal impacts. So any sales tax provision that had a general fund impact also has a legacy impact. I won't go through the fiscal impact to each of these funds, but they are on lines 3 through 29. At the bottom of page 4, there is a fiscal impact to the environmental fund. Moving to page 5 on line 33 with the dedication of the solid waste management tax, it has a fiscal impact of $354,000 and $1.493 million, and this is a revenue gain to the environmental fund, to the SCORE grants. Lines 36 through 39 are the same as how they were heard in committee. Lines 42 are, these are, again, interaction impacts with sales tax provisions that have non-general fund impact. In addition to the legacy, they also have an impact to the transportation advancement account, and the provisions and the fiscal impact are listed. I won't go through those. Line 50 of the spreadsheet is the tax modernization account. This is a special revenue fund, and on line 53, there is a transfer in to the general, from the general fund to the tax modernization account of $2.397 million in fiscal 27. Line 54 of the spreadsheet shows spending for the establishment of a direct free file system, and this has a cost to the special revenue fund of $3.651 million and $3.746 million in fiscal 28 and 29. Turning to page 6 of the special of the non-general fund spreadsheet, line 69 of the spreadsheet on page 6 shows a new item. It is on line 71, and this affects the special, the service and recovery account in the special revenue funds. This is a there is a transfer out of the local sales tax account administered or collected by the Department of Revenue of $3 million fiscal 28 and fiscal 29 for those two fiscal years for a total of $6 million in the 28 and 29 biennium. And then on the on line 75, there is also an interaction impact with the vendor allowance to the Housing Assistance Fund, and the fiscal impact there is also listed. Finally, on lines 81 through 85, there are two provisions that affect the healthcare access account, and these have a zero fiscal impact, and they are the same as how they were heard in tax committee. And that concludes the non-general fund section of the tax revenue portion of the spreadsheet. I will turn our, I'm tag teaming with my colleague, Ms. Highmark, who will cover the property tax aids and credits section.
Great. Before we go to Ms. Highmark, we'll pause and see if members have any questions for Ms. Templin on pages 1-6. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Templin. So if you wouldn't mind going back to the line 53, it's a transfer in the tax modernization account. Like, where is that money coming from, or what is that about?
Ms. Templin.
Chair Norris and Representative, yes. Line 53 is a transfer in from the general fund of $2.3 million into the tax modernization account. The tax modernization account under current law has $5 million, so this would be added to that account.
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Norris. If I can just add a little context to that for Chair Robbins. excuse me. So in the 2003 tax budget bill, we established the tax modernization account, which was designed to put a down payment on bringing a free direct file product to Minnesotans so that they'd no longer have to go through, corporate kind of tax preparation software that pushes unnecessary purchases on consumers, that misuses consumer data, and we have all of the information that we need to provide that kind of service to Minnesotans so that they can just interface directly with the Department of Revenue on their making sure that they're filling out their forms, paying their taxes, or getting their refunds, rather than having to go through that outside third party that has their own profit motivations for providing that product to Minnesotans. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Ms. Templin. I appreciate the clarity. I wasn't sure what that was about. Now I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Templin? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to Ms. Highmark.
Mr. Chair, members, I want to turn your attention to page 7 of the spreadsheet. This is the general fund portion that reflects the property tax aids and credits. I do want to highlight that the signs are different on this spreadsheet. Positive numbers on the spreadsheet represent expenditures, and negative numbers represent cost savings. I'm going to draw your attention to line 3. Column H is the house provisions for fiscal 2025. There's a total net changes. The cost of the provisions in the tax bill are $106,000 in fiscal 2025, a total savings of $21.22 million in fiscal 26 and 27, and a total cost savings of $8.623 million in fiscal 28 and 29. Similar to my colleague, Ms. Templin, I'm going to highlight the provisions that have changed compared to how they were heard in committee. First, want to draw your attention to lines 8 and 9. Those are the property tax exemption, the attachment and appurtenances provisions. Those are unchanged from how they were heard in committee. Lines 10 through 13 are provisions in the governor's tax proposal, and those are not included in this tax bill. Line 14 and 15 are the property tax modifications for Alliance Housing. These are unchanged from how it was heard in committee. Lines 16 through 27 are property tax exemptions that are unchanged from how they were heard in committee. Line 28 and 29 are a property tax abatement for land bank property, which is unchanged from how it was heard in committee. Line 30 and 31 are the community land trust provisions that are also unchanged from how they were heard in committee. Lines 32 through 34 are the market value exclusions for disabled veteran households. This provision is changed. The exclusion amounts are lower than the amounts that were in the as introduced version of this bill. Lines 35 and 36 are the discharge debt subtraction provisions that are unchanged from how they were heard in committee. And we can turn to page 8. Lines 37 and 38 are land value taxation districts. The change in this provision is it is a pilot program, and the cost of these provisions are an unknown positive or negative fiscal impact in fiscal 26, fiscal 26 and 27, and fiscal 28 and 29. I'm going to skip lines 44 through 47, which are governor proposals that are not included in this tax bill. Line 48 is the LGA penalty forgiveness for the cities of Alpha, Odin, and Trotsky. This has a cost of $18,000 in fiscal 25, and the change in this provision is that it also reinstates the small cities' assistance to the cities of Alpha, Odin, and Trotsky, which does not have a fiscal impact. So the fiscal impact is unchanged from how the bill was heard in committee. Line 49 is the penalty forgiveness for Stewart, which is unchanged. Line 50 is the LGA base aid for the city of Baldwin, which is also unchanged and has no fiscal impact. Line 51 is a grant to the Browerville Public Schools. This grant has a cost of $520,000 in fiscal 26 and 27. This is changed from how it was heard in committee because this is a grant rather than a sales tax exemption. However, the fiscal impact is the same. Line 52 is a grant to the city of Minneapolis for Emerald Ash Borer Aid. This has a cost of $400,000 in fiscal year 26 and 27, and this is different from how it was heard in committee because the grant amount is lower. Lines 53 and 54 have no fiscal impact because they're an extension of an existing grant, and this is unchanged from how it was heard in committee. Lines 58 through 62 are governor's provisions that are not included in this bill, so we'll skip over those. Moving on to line 63, this is a transfer out from the general fund to the tax filing modernization account that my colleague Ms. Templin mentioned. This has a cost of $2.397 million in fiscal 28 and 29. Line 64 is a transfer in from the Service and Recovery Special Revenue Fund of $3 million in the fiscal 28 and 29 biennium for a total cost of $6 million. Line 65 and 66 are taxpayer assistance grants and tax credit outreach grants. These provisions are different than how they were heard in committee. The amount is different. It's slightly higher per fiscal year. However, it starts in fiscal 2029, whereas in the original bill it started in fiscal 2026. Lines 67 and 68 are two provisions. Line 67 is a provision regarding the local sales task force. That's very hard to say. Line 67 has a cost of $70,000 in the fiscal 26 and 27 biennium. And line 68 is a provision regarding a report from the Department of Revenue regarding strategies to reduce property taxes, which has no fiscal impact. Both lines 67 and 68 are new provisions. Turning to page 9, line 74 makes modifications to the senior property tax deferral by increasing the qualifications regarding income limitations. This is slightly different from how it was heard in the original bill. The original bill also modified the duration in which seniors were required to reside in their homes. This provision only includes the increase for the income limits. We can now move to page 10, which are the non-general fund provisions related to property tax aids and credits. And I'm just going to draw your attention to line 10, which is the repeal of the local government cannabis aid. The totals on line 10 show the amount that would be saved and given the repeal of the local government cannabis aid. I also want to draw your attention that the signs have flipped on this spreadsheet, so positive numbers represent cost savings. So if we look at the repeal of local government cannabis aid starting in fiscal 26 and 27, that is a cost savings of $12.5 million to this account, and then a cost savings of $31.8 million to this account in the fiscal 28 and 29 biennium. The provisions on line 13 through 18 were included in the governor's proposal but are not included in this bill. And with that, we'll go to the final page of the spreadsheet. Page 11 shows all of the provisions included in the tax bill with no state cost. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I'm ready to stand for questions.
Hey, thank you, Ms. Highmark. Members, any questions on her portion of the spreadsheet? Representative Witte.
Thank you. Can you just explain the Emerald Ashbore aid grant and who's eligible for that?
Mr. Williams.
Chair Norris and Representative Witte. So I'm pulling it up in the bill so we can sort of all put the language in front of us. So that is a grant to the city of Minneapolis to provide homeowners who receive special assessments from the city of Minneapolis for the removal of emerald ash borer trees. There's certain sort of neighborhoods that have to have a score and a particular demographic index published by the federal government. So it's typically higher poverty and lower income areas in Minneapolis. And the city would use this aid to reimburse homeowners in situations where maybe the city went into their property, removed a tree. They received a special assessment on the property for the cost of removing that tree.
Thank you.
Chair Gomez, did you have something you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, thanks. This is a little like unorthodox to do a very specific local aid like this. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of context. There are parts of our city where people have their private property. The park board, I believe it was, is responsible for all the boulevard trees in Minneapolis. The park board went onto people's property without informing them sometimes, got a private contractor to come onto their property without talking to them to cut down their tree, and then they received a giant bill later. So they didn't have a chance to deal with the issue themselves. So these are, you know, constituents, some of whom are, you know, low income, they're in a low income area, and it's just this really weird kind of incursion onto these people's property that resulted in a large and unsustainable bill that some of them cannot pay. And so, you know, people are in danger of not meeting their property tax obligations and, you know, having their homes in peril because of this. So it's to address that issue.
Great. All right. Any other questions, members? All right. Well, thank our nonpartisan staff for that helpful walkthrough. Before we move on to testimony, I want to give a chance for Chair Davids or Chair Gomez to offer any kind of introductory or summary remarks on the bill. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Norris. Thanks, Chair Davids. Yeah, just, you know, quickly, I mean, I think this is the story with every one of these bills. It's not the bill that Chair Davids would have written. It's not the bill that I would have written. You know, we did our best to come together and, you know, address some needs that we'd heard from our communities during the course of our committee. I'm really happy about a few things that we're doing in here that I just want to highlight, including, you know, I talked a little bit in response to Chair Robbins' question about the tax modernization account about direct file. I think this is really important. Mm-hmm. The fact is, the Department of Revenue has all of the information that they need in-house to just let Minnesotans communicate with them directly to file their taxes. We should not have be farming out this function, this basic function of government. People are required to file their taxes. It's not optional. And so we should provide a way for them to do that in a kind of modern manner and interface directly with the Department of Revenue rather than going through a for-profit third party that, as I said, you know, please read the Washington Post article about data privacy and Intuit and TurboTax and H&R Block from a couple of years ago. The very first question that you're asked when you sign into TurboTax is, can we use your data to provide a better experience for you? What that means is that these billion-dollar companies are harvesting people's data that they are, where they're just trying to pay their taxes, which they have to do. And so we should not be putting our people's, you know, private information in those hands. So I'm really happy for us to be moving forward with a direct file program. I'm happy about Representative Hansen and her 35 bipartisan authors on the baby bonus and that we were able to get that in. Many of you are co-authors, so I thank you for that. I'm happy about the taxpayer assistance and outreach grants. We heard from some of our volunteer tax preparers from around the state and about the critical work that they're doing to just make sure that, you know, everybody has the information that they need and has the resources and support that they need to file their taxes and qualify for the and get the credits that they qualify for. I want to thank Chair Norris and Chair Chair Robbins for their work on the vendor allowance and acknowledgement of, you know, the difficulty in some cases because we have allowed this sort of patchwork of sales tax regimes to move forward, that it does, you know, provide, it does pose a barrier to some of our small businesses in compliance. And so they spent a lot of time working out the details of that and trying to make it as impactful as possible within the financial kind of confines. So I thank them for that. I'm happy that we did the property tax exemptions for tribal nations. Representative Johnson's not here, but his, effort to reallocate a portion of the solid waste management tax to counties through SCORE grants. We did some like important no-cost stuff, Alliance Housing, TURC changes, attachments and appurtenances, PCR modernization. And I'm proud that we limited property tax shifts in this bill. I think that we heard a lot from our local governments. We didn't do perfectly in not creating property tax shifts, but I'll say that we did our best to limit them. And I'm also proud that we limited permanent erosion of the tax base, so that to ensure that we're not contributing to, our kind of challenges in meeting our financial obligations to the people of Minnesota down the road. So thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that, Chair Davids and I have, I really have appreciated our relationship and, him and his team and their kindness and warmth toward us, and I appreciate all the members of the tax committee for contributing to what has been, I think, really pleasant tax committee for the last few months. And so people are always, when they hear us around, they're like, why are you talking about taxes and laughing all the time? I'm like, well, that's what we do. So, so I appreciate all the tax talk and all the laughter that we've had together. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Davids.
And Chair Norris, we were charged with putting a bill together that could pass this committee, and then with the old 68 votes in the House, 34 in the Senate, and one governor to sign it, we were to cut $80 million, and we did that. And the way it looks to me, unless I'm missing something, LGA, local government aid to cities, is intact. Very important cities, very important counties, CPA is intact. This bill helps a lot of people. We did not touch PILT, very important. I think as we further discussion for SFIA, there'll be further discussion there. AIS, we did not cut. So to come in and have the charge of cutting $80 million, and then I think that this bill really protects those entities that do so much for so many people. So, and I too have really enjoyed working with Chair Gomez and her staff. And I think we'll wrap up with the thank yous maybe at the end as each testifier gets 30 seconds. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Chair Davids. We are going to move on to our testifiers. First, we've got Commissioner Marquardt. And then after Commissioner Marquardt, we'll begin with Alexandra Fitzsimmons.
The hot seat's between us, we decided. So I'm going to sit here and you sit in the middle. We're just trying to maximize, we're trying to intimidate.
All right. Welcome, Commissioner Marquardt. Always great to have you here in the Taxes Committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Chair Gomez, Chair Davids. A huge thank you for allowing me to testify to House File 2437 as amended. And I really want to also thank you for putting together a good, solid bill that is going to help Minnesotans. And very much appreciated hearing the governor's bill. I think not once, but twice you actually had the governor's bill here. And very much appreciated And where a former tax chair used to talk about bipartisan tax bills, this is truly a bipartisan tax bill. So congratulations, that's not easy to do. So also thank you for putting a number of the governor's provisions in, the attachments and appurtenances, that's all I'm gonna say. I don't wanna jinx it. Maybe we can get that through this year. The short line railroad tax credit transfer, dealing with the Alliance case, even though not the exact same language, but protecting the tenants, which I think is really going to be important. Repealing that K through 12 credit assignment and leaving everything else in place. There's the penalty increase on the CRPs, which will make sure our renters' credit helps renters. I do want to say that the advocates, when they moved the renters' refund to the renters' credit, one of the main reasons was to increase the number of people that would take the credit. So last year, 323,000 renters took the refund. This year, as of April 15th, and that number is going to increase, it's 354,000. That's an increase of 10%. So it's doing one of the big things that it was meant to do. Also, a big thank you for putting that very controversial Department of Policy and Technical bill in here. That's much appreciated. Yes, I know it was tough to do that. Not in the governor's budget, but any time you can enhance the child tax credit, which you do with the baby bonus, is going to help Minnesota families and is a good thing. So good to see that. Also, I know you had the unenviable task of having to look at some budget reductions, and some of those match the governor. The governor is very committed to solving at least half of that structural deficit, so that's a key. Area of concern, of course, is the transfer out of that DOR administrative fee, but certainly understand the position you're in. So I want to end with this, just a huge thank you to the chairs, to this committee, for the strong partnership with the Department of Revenue throughout the years, but this year also. It's just been great to be part of that and know that we stand ready to help as this bill moves forward into the conference committee. So again, chairs, thank you so much. Committee, thank you so much for producing a good bill and for the cooperation.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. All right, we're gonna move on to other public testifiers. Alexander Fitzsimmons is next. Maggie Hanging is on. Do we have a
commission might have a question?
Yeah.
Representative Freiberg, question for the commissioner.
Quick question. Sorry, I was out of the room, I think, at a constituent meeting when this bill was heard before the committee, but one provision in the bill creates an upfront exemption for premium cigars intended to be shipped out of Minnesota. I guess I was just wondering if DOR has the capacity to track rollout and enforcement of the new process.
Commissioner Marquardt.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, we worked with Representative Nash on that portion of the bill, and yes, we can do that. Or, ever how that is working, we can work that through. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Norris. My question for you is on this part that says report of strategies to reduce property taxes. Can you explain how you're going to go about doing this? Do you have a committee that's going to be doing this? Are any of us going to be involved? I just want to know what your process is going to be on that.
It looks like Chair Gomez is going to field that one.
Thank you very much. And thanks, Representative Harder. So what we do is, Chair Davids talked about our budgetary constraints with our bill. Obviously, we had a cut target. But we're taking the bill into conference, and one of the things that we hear consistently from Minnesotans is about property taxes. We have our property tax refund as sort of the circuit breaker that introduces some income sensitivity into what's otherwise a very regressive tax type. And so the report is us bringing a no-cost property tax refund-related provision into conference. We're not sure what's going to happen with the tax target when we go into the next phase of negotiating this bill. And so it was just our intent to say, look, if we happen to have some extra money that we're looking to spend, I know it's unlikely given the overall budget picture, we wanted property tax refunds that put money directly in the pockets of Minnesotans to offset their property tax liability to be among the options that were available to us. So we don't anticipate that we're going to, most likely we're not going to produce a no-cost property tax report. It was, bringing a position on property tax refunds into conference, and happy to talk more about that if you have any concerns about it or, you know, anything like that.
Okay. Representative Harder?
Yes, thank you for that explanation. I think I've said before that that as a state, we are overtaxed on many levels. Like, for example, and this has to do with property taxes per se, but we have a lot of jurisdictions that are doing their own taxes. The state has a tax, the county has a tax, now the city has a tax. I mean, I'm paying three taxes on one item. That doesn't have to do with the property taxes. But if we could somehow look at all of that, I mean, I'm not saying that something will change, but maybe we are doing something as a state that maybe we should be looking at to reduce taxes in general. So I'm happy to talk more about this because I'd like to know more and where I can help, because if I complain about it, then I should be right at the table helping to change that. So thank you for that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Since you're both up here, I have a question on the free file, which is, you know, I don't think people should have to pay a bill to the government, but they do under the way. But the feds are talking about eliminating that at the federal level. How would that work if there's no free file? Because we were talking earlier about it being connected to the, you know, eventually when the feds connect to Minnesota. But if that goes away, then I guess what good does it do to do it for Minnesota when you can't do it for the feds?
Commissioner Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. So we can do a direct file without having the feds do it. It does create some more complications, which we can talk about in conference committee as we move forward.
And Mr. Chair?
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, just if I could add. Initially, they piloted a direct file program at the IRS. It was actually really successful, and it's unfortunate that the decision has been made to at least temporarily pause that. The first round of, so it started as a pilot with just specific states. Mm-hmm. The first round of states that were able to be included in that pilot were states that themselves already had state level mm-hmm. direct file programs. Mm-hmm. And so that was, I can't remember, it was 12 or 15 states, kind of a very different kinds. It was like Utah was in there and Massachusetts and, you know, real geographic and kind of ideological diversity, I would say, of the states that themselves had a freestanding direct file program for their state taxes before that. So, you know, we're very capable of doing a freestanding state level direct file, and that's the intention here, is that there was sort of two ways to go, one which would have linked us up with a federal free file and one which would not, and so we're moving forward with the one that does not. I'll just tell you that, I'm kind of middle-ish income person, and when I file my taxes, I don't use TurboTax anymore. I found a better one if anybody wants to know. But I always end up, I'm kind of average income Minnesotan. My federal taxes I can file for free. I always pay for my state taxes. You know, it's 20 to 40, 50 bucks, but people who are kind of that middle income will still have to go and use one of the available, software to file their federal taxes. But then that state component, which is actually what costs most people, will be free. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do really is, you know, you sort of, federal taxable income FAGI as our starting point. So you kind of just transfer the number over to start out and go from there. So.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Seeing no further questions for Commissioner Marquardt. Thank you, Commissioner Marquardt. Appreciate you joining us. All right. Now we're going to move on to the rest of our testifiers. We've got Alexander Fitzsimmons, and then Maggie Hange is on deck. I'm going to be a little more generous than Chair David's recommended 30 seconds. We're going to give people 2 minutes, but we do have to get to floor at 11, so I'm going to be fairly aggressive about cutting people off at the two-minute mark. And there's only one seat open, but just to kind of cut down on time, if who's ever on deck can kind of move close to the testifier table so you're ready to slide in, that'll save us a few seconds. That will help. So with that, next up is Alexandra Fitzsimmons. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, Representative Gomez. Excuse me. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Senior Policy Director with Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. Children's Defense Fund Minnesota develops and advocates for policies that improve the well-being of children and increase the economic security. We focus particular attention to the healthy growth and development of Black children, Indian children, and children from communities of color. I'm glad to be back in front of this committee today to again share our strong support for the Child Tax Credit Newborn Baby Bonus. Investing in infants, toddlers, and young families is a valuable priority for Minnesota. These early years are essential for a child's development, with 80% of brain development happening in the first 3 years of a child's life. But parents' incomes tend to be lower when their children are younger. More than a quarter of Minnesota babies are born into low-income households. 39% of Black and 28% of Hispanic infants and toddlers live in low-income households, compared to 12% of white infants and toddlers. This two-generational tax policy provides our state with a targeted opportunity to help babies, especially babies of color, explore their young worlds, form secure attachments, and grow in a more economically stable and healthier household. Welcoming a baby is an exciting time for families. Families are filled with joy. At the same time, having a baby can also bring stress and anxiety to young families. Understandably, babies are expensive. A child tax credit bonus for newborn babies can bring about several benefits. It can help reduce financial strain on parents, maintain economic stability for families at a time when family income may be waning and when an income boost is needed most, foster healthy growth and development of newborns, improve a child's future health and education outcomes, and strengthen Minnesota communities. Thank you for including the $100 Child Tax Credit Baby Bonus with an advance payment option in the tax omnibus bill and prioritizing the well-being of our youngest Minnesota children. We're grateful for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Maggie Hange, followed by Nan Madden. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, Chair Norris, and members of the committee. My name is Maggie Hange, and I'm the Assistant Director for Family Policy at the Minnesota Catholic Conference. We're the public policy voice of the state's bishops. I'm here today to applaud, just like you heard before, the inclusion of the baby bonus as an increase in the state child tax credit in Article 1, Section 9 of the DE Amendment. We are pleased that you are putting a portion of your small negative budget target and the state's resources back where it's needed most, into the hands of our families, especially those with infants. Many agree that the child tax credit is a valuable tool for Minnesota families, and the legislature once again has an opportunity to strengthen this program. The thought of bringing a child into this world can be daunting. A recent survey found that parents spend more than $20,000 during the baby's first year, not including labor and delivery. In that same survey, 26% said they're putting off having more children for financial reasons. Offering those who welcome a new child a $100 bump or baby bonus via the child tax credit could help curb some of these fears. It could also help families purchase a safer car seat, for example, instead of using one secondhand that could be at or nearing its expiration date. But families are also looking for more relief. An ideologically diverse set of organizations recently signed a letter urging legislators to expand the state child tax credit. These signatories see the benefit that a CTC has provided, and this letter is included in your packet. Although we are grateful to see the baby bonus included, even if small in a smaller form than hoped, we encourage the committee to extend the baby bonus back to the original $400 as was present in HF 2254. Members could also think creatively about a scaled approach. We also encourage you to keep in mind HF 2339, which expands the phase-out threshold for the child tax credit by 20%. This bill enjoys the support of a politically diverse group of authors, including many members of this committee. Expanding the phase-out threshold would allow the child
Please
tax credit...
Please conclude your testimony.
Yes. To reach nearly half of our state's children. We recognize the fiscal impact, or the fiscal outlook looks cloudy, but strong families are going to lead to a strong state both now and in the future, and we encourage you to expand the child tax credit and give more relief to families. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Nan Madden, and we have Kurt Zellers on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I want to thank you for including a number of items in the bill that support effective policies to improve the economic security of Minnesotans and their families and provide a better tax filing experience. Thank you for including an expansion of the child tax credit, a proven strategy to improve family well-being and reduce hardship for Minnesota kids. We hope you can build further on child tax credit expansion in conference committee. Thank you for the ongoing commitment to create a direct file option for filing state income taxes. Direct file would save Minnesotans time and money. It would likely increase the number of Minnesotans who receive the tax credits or other tax benefits they currently qualify for, and increase the effectiveness of outreach efforts. Thank you for including additional resources for taxpayer assistance and tax credit outreach grants. This is an important investment in reaching the full promise of the child tax credit and recent improvements in the renter's credit. And we encourage you to be open in conference to having this additional support happen sooner. We also thank you for provisions in the bill to support Minnesota renters. We support the provisions to ensure that renters receive their CRPs that are needed for filing for the renter's credit. And while we don't have a position on the specific language in the bill, we really appreciate the attention to protecting renters from harmful financial consequences related to the Alliance housing issue and maintaining their access to the renter's credit. We are disappointed that the target did not allow for more progress on raising revenues. Federal policymakers have plans to dramatically step back from their commitments to health care, food support, and other services Minnesotans count on, and their budget plans would shift more funding responsibilities to the states. In this environment, Minnesota needs more revenues, and it makes sense for those with the most resources to contribute a bit more in order to protect Minnesotans' health and economic well-being. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Kurt Zellers, followed by Stephanie Pinkala. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chair Gomez, Co-Chair Davids. Kurt Zellers, CEO for the Minnesota Business Partnership. One of the provisions in the bill to help with our retailers, and I want to thank both co-chairs, the retailer vendor allowance, which it's great to have a system in place helping our vendors with those that have to pay taxes. So we want to say thank you for that and helping make Minnesota business friendly but business competitive. The one thing I would ask very gently is probably one of the most important bills for us this session. We agree with Governor Walz on this is the R&D tax credit. I know I'm between the two, so this is safe zone now. Minnesota, for those that didn't know, was the first state to have the R&D tax credit. It's passed in 1981, so we led the nation on this. Unfortunately, our neighbors took our good idea and have used it to their own benefits. Wisconsin's at 25%. Iowa has no limit on their refundability. We're hoping that the 25% stays in. But then you've got Texas and Georgia at 50 and 75%. So we want to thank the committee for helping make Minnesota, keep Minnesota business competitive. And we think in full support of the governor's proposal, our membership is all 100% behind that R&D tax credit. We hope that as the conversation continues, that will be a part of it. And anything we can do respectfully, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, to help with that, we'll be here to testify. But I thank you for your time, Chair Norris. I think I'm under my 60 seconds, so have fun session today.
Appreciate the timeliness. Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Stephanie Pinkala. Rick Horton is on deck. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Norris, and thank you, Chairs Davids and Gomez, for the opportunity to speak before the committee this morning regarding the Delete All Amendment to House File 2437,
My name is Stephanie Pincala, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Nature Conservancy, a nonprofit organization working to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends toward our vision where people and nature thrive. I'm here to speak specifically to our concerns and the changes included in the bill affecting the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act, or SFIA, payments that were included in Article 7, Section 13. The new proposal included that adjusts and generally reduces the SFIA payment rates from fiscal years 2026 to 2029 will have a significant and negative long-term impact that will risk large tracts of forests in our state. Climate change, water quality and quantity challenges, biodiversity loss, and timber supply are all mitigated by sustaining healthy forests, and SFIA has been an important tool for doing that at a meaningful scale. With threats only increasing to all those things I just mentioned, the forest conservation that SFIA enrollments deliver has never been more critical. SFIA prevents these otherwise highly desirable lands from being broken up into smaller parcels that threaten forests' ability to maximize clean air, clean water, outdoor recreation, wildlife habitat, and forest products. Many of the landowners who participate in SFIA are private individuals, some who may be motivated to enroll by conservation outcomes, but others who enroll for the financial benefit and help deliver conservation that provides benefits for all Minnesotans. The proposed change to reduce rates beyond the existing 10% per year fluctuation that's currently allowed in statute not only breaches covenants the state has with individual landowners, it also reduces confidence in the program and disincentivizes future enrollment and the re-enrollment of those who have 80 or 20-year covenants that are coming to a close. Clean water, carbon sequestration, wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, access, and wood products are all at risk if this proposal remains unchanged. We've also submitted a letter noting some other items that were not included in the bill, and we do thank you for not touching PILT, Chair Davids. We wanted to focus our attention on SFIA, though, for today's hearing. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Rick Horton. Sheila Vanney is on deck. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Norris, Chair Brands, Chair Gomez for having me in committee. My name is Rick Horton. I'm the Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries. It's a trade association representing the forest products industry. I agree with everything she said, and maybe I can quit my testimony, get in on 30 seconds, but Stephanie did a great job with that. And I would direct you to your packets. There's a letter in there from a broad coalition, a very broad coalition of folks with concerns about the Sustainable Forest Incentives Act. MFI is opposed to the changes in Article 7, Section 13 of House File 2437 that cuts the payments to SFIA. The way it's structured is going to have a disproportionate impact on the people that have made the biggest commitment to conservation. They've signed 50-year covenants on their land to protect it, and they're going to be the ones that are going to get cut very first. Also, my members, I have members that have about a half million acres enrolled in this, and they allow public access. So a lot of folks from down here go up north and recreate. They hunt, they fish, they camp, they snowmobile, they ATV on a lot of these lands. And when they're riding down the trail, they really don't know whose land they're on. They think it's all public, and it's not. It's very highly intermingled. And so if any of these groups got out of the program, it would make it very difficult for those trails to continue to exist. You know, there's three ways you can make money off of a big industrial land complex. You can sustainably harvest timber, you can lease out the hunting and recreational rights, or you can sell off the land. Now, those last two things that are locked up in the covenant and they can't do, and then in return, they had a promise from the state of Minnesota that they'd get an annual payment to make up for that lost revenue. So if we're going to go through with this massive reduction, and you're talking a 45% reduction in the first year
please
and 40% in the next, we really should consider having the out clause that was in the original bill and allow those people to get out of the program so that they can pursue other options. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We've got Sheila Vanney next, followed by Kyle Playford. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Norris and Chairs Gomez and Davids. Sheila Vanney, I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. SWCDs are special purpose units of local government organized under Minnesota State Statutes, Chapter 103C. Professional conservation staff with direction from locally elected boards work in cooperation with private landowners toward our healthy soil and clean water goals. We are tremendously grateful that SWCD aid was established in Chapter 477A as an efficient and effective way for the state to contribute toward the costs of SWCDs delivering on their statutory obligations. We recognize that there's tough choices being faced by this committee. As this bill moves forward, we ask for there to be consideration for a modest increase in funding for SWCDs for aids payable in 2025 and beyond, so that our work can get closer to keeping pace with inflation and our own rising costs. We appreciate last biennium's increase in state funding to the $15 million level, which allowed our districts to expand projects and technical assistance with private landowners. While this two-year funding increase was most appreciated, that it goes to $12 million this year and into the future makes it difficult for our districts to continue operations. We came in this session asking for continued funding of $22 million a year, which would be a strong step toward addressing the unmet needs of SWCDs, but in light of fiscal constraints, a modest funding level, continuing the current $15 million into the future, would mean that we could reliably maintain trained and credentialed staff to carry out the important work that we do, tackling much-needed work on our woodlands, shorelands, ag lands, wetlands, urban landscapes, and more, and providing significant economic impacts in our communities. And Mr. Chair, I'll just point out that we do have a couple handouts in your packets, and I would hope that members would give some attention to those. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Great, thank you. We've got Kyle Playford up next and Bradley Peterson on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kyle Playford, and I am a board member for the Financial Planning Association of Minnesota. The Financial Planning Association of Minnesota is the leading professional organization for financial planners in the state. Our mission is to advance the financial planning profession and support Minnesotans in achieving their financial goals through ethical and competent financial guidance. A warm thank you, first of all, to the members of the committee who have met with the Financial Planning Association to listen to our concerns, myself and my colleague Alex Pengelly, who is the board president. With the passing of the updated language in the DE amendment removing the sales tax on professional services, the Financial Planning Association withdraws its opposition to the bill and again wishes to thank the authors of the amendment for listening to the concerns that our group and others have raised. So that is my testimony. Hopefully under 30 seconds.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate the brevity. Next up is Bradley Peterson. And then on deck, we've got Julie Wishnack. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Norris, Chair Gomez, Chair Davids. First off, I want to congratulate you on putting together a pretty good bill. We very much appreciate, or first off, I'm Bradley Peterson here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We very much appreciate the minimization of impact on local governments. We know that you had a tough road to go. I also want to thank you for the inclusion of provisions related to TIF on housing and economic development for Greater Minnesota. These will help us address our challenges in our communities. We also appreciate the inclusion of some changes to the workforce house, or the housing tax credit that will make it more possible to do workforce housing projects using that tool. The final thing I'd like to address, though, is the issue of local sales taxes, which I know have been a great source of frustration for legislators and cities and counties alike. We've sort of been on this policy roller coaster since at least 2019 in terms of what are the rules of the road when it comes to local sales taxes. In 2023, we had the moratorium. We had a working group that was created at the Department of Revenue. They issued a report. We largely supported the provisions of that report. And so I think we're disappointed to see that we're going to create another task force to address this issue and continue the moratorium. Local sales taxes help communities solve problems. They help communities enhance their infrastructure and the quality of life in their communities. And I think we've been on this journey for quite a while, and I would urge the legislature as we go through the rest of session to please just try to figure it out. It's time. Cities have been waiting. We've had a lot of discussion. It's time to figure it out. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Julie Wishnack, followed by Kathy Mihalik. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, chairs and committee members. My name is Julie Wishnack. I'm the community development director for the city of Minnetonka. Thank you for having us today. I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to talk about tax increment for a minute. We are so thankful that it is included in the bill. We're talking about the Opus TIP district. If you're not familiar, 169-62 Crosstown, the northwest corner of that area. Really, we set up this TIP district to talk about things like promoting development, promoting housing, specifically around light rail improvements in this area. And we also had a lot of road and circulation issues that had to be fixed. And if you've never been to Opus, you will understand why that is an important comment. Basically, we're transforming a 1970s office business park into both office and mixed-use development, including a lot of housing. I think what I'm most proud of during this TIF district, we've been able to build 1,600 units of housing, 40% of which is affordable, which is amazing. And I think that momentum needs to keep going, so that's why this extension is very important. If you ask me why we need this extension, I would use the word timing. That is the issue here. With 16 parcels involved in the tax increment district, it's very hard to coordinate all of the road projects that have to happen, as well as the property owners and the redevelopers that are improving in this area. So we were hopeful that we would also get a four-year extension. Perhaps we could have more conversation about that with the chairs and the authors of this bill, but we are grateful for the five-year extension. I'll keep it short. Thank you for the time. Again, we appreciate your support, and I promise if this extension goes forward, we'll make more progress on housing and especially affordability. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Kathy Mihalik, followed by Roz Peterson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and co-chairs. My name is Kathy Mihalik. I'm the Director of Economic Development at the City of St. Cloud. I want to thank you today and really appreciate your support for two tax increment financing items for the City of St. Cloud. Specifically, they are Article 5 and in your summary, Section 27. And I will address that one first. It really provides a valuable tool for downtown St. Cloud, which is our number one economic development priority. It allows for stimulating redevelopment of vacant and underutilized sites in downtown St. Cloud. Second, I'd like to just bring your attention to Section 28, which is the second item for the City of St. Cloud, and that is allowing for an extension on a redevelopment district that was stifled by the pandemic and increasing financing and construction costs. This extension provides for time to for us to attract the right mix of development, resulting in a best use of the site and increased tax base and job creation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Roz Peterson, followed by Ben Helvick Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Chair Davids and Chair Gomez. My name is Roz Peterson. I'm the Public Policy Director for NAAP, which is the Commercial Real Estate Development Trade Association, and we have over 600 members. I appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts on House File 2437 as amended. First, we want to thank you for the zero tax increases and certain sectors such as the office, and particularly in the downtown sectors and the central business districts are struggling, and the higher costs to do businesses in business in Minnesota have made things challenging enough. So again, thank you for looking at other options to hit your target. Second, we'd like to share some concerns about creating land value tax districts, or LVT, especially in Minneapolis and St. Paul. A letter highlighting economic, social, and administrative concerns are in your packet. LVT disproportionately impacts long-term owners, disincentivizes preservation and nonprofit use. Valuation complexity will result in costly disputes, and tax fairness and market principles are ignored while the tax base is shifted and may result in overall lower valuations as noticed in previous studies. Developers react more favorably to carrots than they do sticks. LTV is a stick, and the Cub Credit, for example, is a carrot, which we would love to see in maybe in the future. And also, I wanted to extend an invitation to tour some of our buildings downtown that have been impacted significantly by the changes in how we live and work and play. So anyway, thank you for your time, and I appreciate you listening and your consideration. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next is Ben Helvick Anderson, followed by Beth Johnston. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Norris, Chair Gomez, and Chair Davids, and committee members. My name is Ben Helvick Anderson, and I'm the Vice President of Policy and Organizing at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Thank you for all of your hard work on this bill. Beacon is one of the largest developers and providers of supportive housing with 24 buildings and serving over 1,200 residents. And we are really grateful for you all and chairs for your inclusion of the provision to create a new eligible use for the state housing tax credit to approve its effectiveness for supportive housing. Supportive housing, as many of you know, is deeply affordable homes paired with on-site services for those who have experienced homelessness. Supportive housing doesn't exist without the service dollars, and including services as an eligible use for the tax credit allows supportive housing to use the tax credit to fill this critical gap. The affordable housing tax credit is already a key tool in an uncertain time to help fill critical capital gaps, and allowing it also to fill service gaps will help create and sustain more supportive housing in our state. So thank you again for the inclusion of this provision, all your hard work on this bill, and for supporting housing overall. Thank you.
Thank you. Beth Johnston is next, and we've got Nathan Jessen on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Norris, co-chairs Gomez and Davids, and members of the Tax Committee. For the record, my name is Beth Johnston, and I am with the League of Minnesota Cities, testifying on behalf of our 842 member cities. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on this bill and appreciate the hard work that went into it, as well as the efforts to minimize property tax shifting. We are tracking many provisions in this bill, but there is a couple I want to highlight. First, the local sales tax provisions. The League has long been supportive of general authority, establishing general authority for cities to enact local sales taxes. We do not support extending the moratorium that is found in this bill because we do believe that this could lead to a growing backlog of proposals from local governments. We do strongly support the TIF general changes to tax increment financing in Article 5. This is an important economic development tool for many cities, and we value some consideration in making some of these adjustments applicable to all cities statewide, and are grateful for the city's specific provisions as well. Regarding cannabis aid, we do not support repealing that, but we do appreciate the inclusion of Article 4 in this bill regarding local government aid. We do work with our cities to try to make sure that they come into compliance with the Office of the State Auditor with their financial reporting requirements. And we know that local government aid is very helpful to local governments, and so we also appreciate the maintaining of that appropriation. Additional information on other items in this bill can be found in the letter in your packet, and we appreciate the willingness of the chairs to meet with us throughout session and look forward to continue working as this bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we've got Nathan Jessen, followed by Matt Hilgert. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Nathan Jessen. I represent the Minnesota Inter-County Association. I've also submitted a letter with additional background. Earlier in session, this committee had a discussion about property tax shifts and how they're sometimes more popular during deficits because it doesn't show up as a cost on the spreadsheet. We talked about the concerns there. I just wanted to say that I think this bill does a good job of managing that issue. It also doesn't create, it doesn't create new significant property tax shifts, and it doesn't cut existing aid programs like payment in lieu of taxes or aquatic invasive species aid, and that's just especially important this year with counties facing cost shifts in other areas. I did want to talk briefly about the proposed repeal of the cannabis aid. I understand the committee had a difficult target. It's got to reach it somehow, but it always just struck me that those with legalization concerns should support this aid because of the implementation costs in their area, and those with that supported legalization should support the aid because it gives local governments skin in the game when it comes to success of the industry in their area. So we'd just like to have more conversations about that provision moving forward. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. We've got Matt Hilgert next. And lastly, we've got Michael Dahl. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgert. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. It's good to be with you all this morning. A few notes of gratitude for this committee, just in general for your work on really complex property tax issues this session, your minimization of the shifts that you've heard universally from local governments we are appreciative of. The Alliance Bill, this was a deeply technical, complex case, and this committee rolled up its sleeves, did a half-day hearing on it, and passed something in a bipartisan fashion. We are really appreciative of that. SCORE funding, another bipartisan issue. Commissioner Johnson, thank you for your work on this, your passion, and others in this room. It's great. I know the dollar amounts are kind of nominal in size, but it's a sign that we realize that local governments are facing really important solid waste management infrastructure needs, and this is a huge tool here. The senior property tax deferral, Mr. Chair, this is something you've worked on for many years. I'm very appreciative of this. This is a tool in the toolbox. It's not going to solve everything, but we're increasing that even a little bit more this year. The cannabis aid, I'm not going to lie, stings a little bit. And I get it that this is something that we might not have convinced everyone that, you know, we need this money for implementation of our registration duties or even just let's do this because all other states afford some kind of revenue sharing for local governments or a local sales tax option. At the end of the day, I would say, even if we haven't convinced you of those two factors, this is resources that local governments will use to help offset other costs as well. I want to end on a positive note, though, and that is just to reiterate the protecting of the tax base. Each year that we've been here in the last 5 years, we've gotten more strong and strong bipartisan defenders of the tax base. That tax base erosion is causing tax increases. So we appreciate that these bills each year, especially this year, try to limit that. And I just want to thank you. As you go into the void, remember that counties are being impacted in other issue budget areas that you heard on the House floor last year. So fiercely defending that property tax base will be even more paramount. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if Mr. Hilgert could tell us what his pen says.
I found this pen here.
Minnesota Senate.
Oh, boy. Well,
we're going to have to start searching people at the doors.
We'll consider your testimony accordingly, Mr. Hunger. All right. Lastly, we have Michael Dahl. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Norris, co-chairs Davids and Gomez, members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with Homeline, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding the institutions of public charity issue or the matter dealing with Alliance Housing. In short, the current version of the omnibus tax bill assures low-income renters living in properties where their landlord is a nonprofit housing provider that they will not bear the full burden of their property taxes for their building. Not correcting this issue would have in fact made affordable housing unaffordable for its tenants, potentially leading some to homelessness. Secondly, tenants living in these buildings now qualify for the renter's credit because their building's owners pay property taxes. To reiterate what I've said before this committee on other occasions, the renter's credit is used by many low-income tenants to buy basic necessities. Non-perishable foods, household supplies, clothing, eyeglasses, car repairs, medications, school supplies, you get the picture. Transitioning from the problem to your solution can mean the difference of hundreds of dollars for many low-income renters. Thank you. Thank you for your solution, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any other members of the public who wish to testify? Yes. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mary Hartnett, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Elections Minnesota, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that works for healthy, inclusive democracy by working to limit the influence of big money in politics. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm here to thank you for including the Political Contribution Refund Program and Modernization Program and to continue to fund the program. 90% of candidates for the office use the fund and agree to cap the amount they spend on campaigns. It has broad bipartisan support. The excessive amount of big and dark money flowing to elections is staggering and threatens our democracy. Large majorities across party lines say that big campaign donors and special interests have too much influence on decisions. People in members' own districts, by contrast, are widely viewed as having too little influence. Public financing programs put more power into the hands of everyday voters. This bill will help in a small but important way to offset the imbalance by making the public financing program we have in Minnesota, the PCR, easier to use and voters more engaged in the process, make candidates less dependent on big donors and more accountable to voters. Thank you so much for including it, and thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Great. Thank you. All right. With that, we conclude public testimony, and we will move on to member discussion. First up is Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and I just want to say thank you for the committee as the real rookie here, Representative Hewitt. I wanted to just say it's been a great experience, so thank you for that. Thanks for including the baby bonus tax and the drug tax stamp, Chairs. I really appreciate that. Finally put that one to rest. And I did want to make some comments about the local cannabis aid. I think we've heard a lot about that, but I think it's important to understand that the cities do have the opportunity to charge fees, and there really is minimal stuff that the cities and counties have to do. There are two sections of law in Chapter 342, and I've personally been liaising between conversations with local business owners and cities that are actually making this much harder than it needs to be. So anybody who works for a city that is curious about why it's so hard, feel free to reach out. I think there's a lot of things we can do to get out of the way and to not suck up as much money as they think it's actually costing them, because there's not as much enforcement as is being presented. So I want to make that really clear, because I do think that is getting a bit off track with the misrepresentation that there's so much that cities have to do. The Office of Cannabis Management stands ready to do the vast amount of enforcement, and locals can help with compliance, obviously, just like they do for alcohol and tobacco today. And they do have that local charge. In terms of their local retail registrations, there's things that are just being, like I said, overcomplicated. So I'm glad that we're doing this. I'm glad that we're putting this back towards the state. And I think it's a good investment on our part. So thank you, Chairs, for doing that as well.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members? Representative Lee.
Great. Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, just want to amplify again the reduction in the penalty to provide a renter with a certificate of rent paid, and shifting that over now to a new penalty for failing to provide DOR with a copy of that. And so just having these two requirements is really helpful to make sure that the renter's credit program actually works the way it's supposed to. And so want to just amplify that for folks. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Chair Yuki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both chairs for including the ability for cities to transfer excess TIF increment into affordable housing trust funds. We had really great success with the pilot project, and hopefully that you can bring that into conference and keep it in there, and for the income averaging as well.
All right. Seeing no further members, we're going to go to Chair Davids and Chair Gomez for closing remarks. Okay. Chair Davids.
Thank you very much, Chair Norris. And I was reading through, and I just want to make sure that Representative Hansen's tax stamps were in there, and I think they are somewhere, right? Just make sure they're in there. That's important, because that was the first bill we heard. And again, I am very thankful for the members of this committee, the department, Commissioner Marquardt, Joanna Bears here every day helping out. And then I'd like to really thank House Research, partisan and nonpartisan, both, and House Fiscal. You're wonderful to work with. I want to thank Jacob Cowan, who is very, very helpful to the efforts of this committee. I would really like to thank Chair Joy, Vice Chair Joy, for all of your help, and especially staff Pages and Sam Moyer and Jennifer. Thank you so much. You make this work. Having to put up with me is you should get hazard pay, I would think. But the exciting thing here right now is we're going to name, now this is not official, both, but I'm going to name the song for this year's tax bill on our side, because I can't name it for your side. If you have another one, we'll certainly entertain
that. Mr. Chair, I thought we were doing this in a bipartisan fashion. I thought we were going to have to negotiate the song title.
I'm extremely partisan, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Well,
I'm very partisan, and I really enjoy working with Chair Gomez, Patrick, your community legislative assistant. Thanks for all that you do. But it's a Beatles song, and I really Jefferson don't have Starship. To change too many words. Not Jefferson Starship. Jane just didn't quite
care. Miracles.
Miracles, yeah. I hope we're not that far off. But it's we can work it out. Going into conference, I think we have that. But it's, you know, and I'm being very partisan here because we should have discussed this further and come up with a Jefferson Starship song. But that being said, we can work it out because I believe we can, and we're headed. We'll be headed soon to the floor and then the conference committee, and let's get this thing out. There's a lot of good in this bill. There really is for the charge we had. I think we, Chair Gomez was, as I said, wonderful to work with. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Life is very short, and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friend. So maybe we might be able to agree on that particular song. So Chair Davids expressed our gratitude to our staff that works so hard, and we just appreciate each of you so much. He mentioned our excellent researchers, our fiscal staff, our partisan researchers, Sean and Jacob, our CAs, Patrick and Sam, our CLAs, Jennifer and Shamat, and our Pages, Joe and Ciara. We have our revisers, who are our shadow supporters of every single thing that we do here, Maureen Sandy and Evan Powell. Rob Hubbard puts together our session dailies and tries to make us sound really smart in his articles about us. Thank you. Yeah, it's just, it's been wonderful, and I really appreciate my vice chair, Chair Norris, and thanks for running this committee so well, and more to come. Well, we're on the first step of long but short, hopefully short journey of getting this into conference and getting it back. So just deep appreciation to everybody for all of your hard work. This is a, you know, complex, very important policy area. I always appreciate the substantive and respectful conversations that we're able to have. And thank Chair Davids for making it such a joy to be together 3 days a week for most of session. So thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you, Chair Gomez. With that, Chair Davids will renew his motion that House File 2437, the We Can Work It Out tax bill, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and that staff make any technical adjustments necessary to the bill language and to the spreadsheet to reflect the intent of the Taxes Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The motion is adopted, and House File 2437, as amended, is re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All right. Next, members, we do have a little more business we have to take care of. We have a couple of vehicle bills that we need to move out. First, Chair Gomez, would you like to move that House File 2257 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
All right. Chair Gomez moves House File 2257. This bill received a full hearing in the Taxes Committee earlier this session and deals with the Alliance Minnesota Supreme Court case. The provisions are also included in the 2025 House Taxes Bill that was just re-referred to Ways. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The motion is adopted, and House File 2257 is re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And then lastly, Chair Gomez, would you like to move that House File 2730 be re-referred to the General Register?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. This bill is the public finance bill that received a full bill hearing in early April. It is also the vehicle bill that hopefully will not be needed. Any member discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion is adopted, and House File 2730 is re-referred to the General Register. All right. Any final closing remarks, Chair Davids or Chair Gomez?
No, let's go.
All right.
Let's go.
Our next hearing of the Taxes Committee will be the call of the chair, where Chair Davids will have the gavel. And with that, members, we are adjourned.